Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We are opening up the mailbag today, so let's get right into it. Our first question comes from Jeff Nichols. What rotation changes can Eric Spoelstra make to shore up the starting lineup without compromising the bench? What do you think, David?
That's an interesting question. I guess Goran has been struggling with injury. We got a report out today saying that he's had a minor foot injury that's affecting him, and clearly he struggled a little bit without Deion Waiters in the lineup. Obviously, Deion's still nursing that sore ankle, so the Heat have not looked as sharp as they have in recent months. There are a lot of factors, so maybe fans might be looking for a lineup change, something, a tweak here and there. But my feeling is that Spoelstra has always kind of stuck to his guns, and that's proven to be a wise decision, particularly this season when he's preached consistency and, as you know, has relied on it as much as he possibly could, given the number of injuries and players coming in and out of the lineup. I don't know that he necessarily needs to make a change. I think things are working as well as can be expected without Waiters, considering what a large contribution he brings. And you don't want to change things too much just for the sake of change, particularly when you're just a few weeks away. You don't know if there's going to be any kind of issues with timing if you insert a new player into the rotation. You like what you've got coming off the bench. What I don't even know what changes you could potentially make. I know that's basically the question, but if you're looking for rotation changes, I don't know that there is one to be made. I think you're pretty much stuck with what you've got. Considering, you know, Josh Richardson is back from injury, he's starting now. Justice Winslow isn't going to be available. I mean, what are you going to change? You know, you can't move Magruder out of the lineup. You're not going to replace Luke Babbitt with who? Udonis Haslam? I don't know that there is anything that you can possibly do at this point.
Right, and you talk about Deion Waiters, and that's really what's missing here, is what Waiters brings to the table as far as facilitating for other teammates and everything like that. But and if you're looking to replace Waiters with a Waiters light, that's not going about it the right way. I mean, the Heat basically have four guys who can get to the rim and kick out or create open shots for others. It's Dragic, Waiters, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson. Waiters, of course, is injured. So that's four guys. This is something we asked Ira Winderman about on our podcast last week, and he basically just dismissed it as I proposed the idea of moving James Johnson in the starting lineup, and replacing Luke Babbitt. And he basically dismissed it as, you know, if you move James Johnson in the starting lineup, then who does Tyler Johnson pair with in the second unit? That second unit gets wiped off the floor. And so that's really the conundrum that the Heat are in right now, is they only have 11 guys on this roster, really. I mean, Justice Winslow could have been the guy to replace him. I mean,
sure.
Maybe at that point you move Winslow into the two-guard slot or you move him into that Magruder spot at small forward or something like that. And all of a sudden, right, you have a guy who can get to the rim, somebody with a quick first step, who's got a good eye for passing, just like Winslow does, and maybe he can take a step forward.
I think I see where Jeff was kind of leading, because given what you just broke down so well, there's really only one option, I guess, and that would be replacing Okoro White, you know, inserting him into the starting lineup for Luke Babbitt.
Right, which wouldn't do anything. And so,
yeah, I don't know that it would necessarily make the kind of change. I mean, Babbitt's three-point shooting,
right,
as inconsistent as it could be, still is a weapon, and you know, defenses have to consider it. They don't sag off of him so much that, you know, that it changes everything or you know, forces defenses to collapse on their you know, Goran or Waiters as they're driving to the hoop. So I don't know that you necessarily want to take out a guy who's capable of knocking down the three-point shot. And look, he's hitting still at a 40% rate. You know, considering he started off so slowly, he's been hitting really well over the last few months. So I don't know that you'd want to take him out of the lineup just to bring in the energy that Okoro brings to the table. And obviously, that's a great asset. I think a lot of fans see that kind of energy, maybe reminds them of, you know, Tyler Johnson a few years ago, who was a spark plug, et cetera. And you know, he's what would they call him? 13 Okaro, right. When he had that streak going. I mean, it coincided. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of positives there to Okaro White, but I don't know if necessarily inserting him in the starting lineup is one of them.
And Richardson is somebody that we thought could be a starter at the beginning of the year, somebody that we thought would start over Deion Waiters in the first place after they needed sign Waiters. And if you're going to try to replace Waiters, you know, going back to my theory about adding James Johnson so you have another ball handler, I don't like that idea as much anymore as I used to, just because, you know, it's like losing a bunch of money in real estate and then trying to make up that money in real estate. Like, at some point, you just got to, like, you got to search for your solution in some other area. And what Richardson can bring to the table is defensive versatility, more so than I think what Waiters can bring. More of a natural catch-and-shoot guy. This is, like, best-case scenario, theoretical. We know Richardson hasn't been great in catch-and-shoot situations. We'll talk about Richardson in a little bit with the next question. But, you know, you're hoping that maybe adding Richardson in place of Waiters gives the offense a little bit more of a different dynamic, in a sense where Dragic gets the ball more, and he's got a lot of natural catch-and-shoot guys around him, like Richardson now, where Waiters isn't really a natural catch-and-shoot guy, even though he's been really good at it this season, and Richardson hasn't. So maybe that's what the offense would look like. Mucking all this up is that Dragic is playing with some foot injury that's so painful that the trainers have to cut holes in his shoes. I'm not even sure what that means, but it doesn't sound like a good situation. So if Dragic isn't injured, then I think this thing works a little bit more than it has. And, you know, Richardson's been on and off injured, so he's not – shooting is such a rhythm game that he's just not in a rhythm. He hasn't been afforded really the chance to get into one. So I think with all this stuff, there's really not a move to be made. Miami's playing with 11 guys. Udonis Haslam's officially in the Juwan Howard phase of his career. Like, he's just not he's not a player anymore. He's an assistant coach essentially on the roster, and that's – and then you have McRoberts and Winslow and Bosch and I'm forgetting somebody – who are all, Waiters, of course, obviously. Waiters, you have four guys that are injured, so you're playing with 11 guys. I mean,
yeah,
it's just, there's no wiggle room for this team right now.
No, there isn't. So, I mean, look, it works really well. I think the Dragic injury is obviously the biggest factor. Yeah. Well, second to the loss of Waiters. Mm-hmm. And I think the game against Boston was a tough one. You know, it was at Boston, so obviously they're going to get some calls going their way. There were some questionable ones, particularly towards the end. Our good friend Marcus Smart drawing a flop there at near the end of the game.
Whoa. I can't believe they called it.
I don't know. And it's funny because on NBA TV, it was just the Celtics broadcast, so I don't know if you were able to catch a Heat version of it or not.
I had the Heat
version. So I was listening to Tommy Heinsohn talk about the brilliance of Marcus Smart the whole time, and I was just like, I don't want to hear this, Tommy. I'm sorry, your Hall of Fame career, and you're stuck there on home games, but I don't want to hear about Marcus, you know, taking a flop there and looking like a brilliant defender when he's anything but. You know, I obviously, that's, you know, maybe I'm being a little extreme here. I'm sorry. I got really worked up watching the end of the game, something that rarely happens nowadays, but when I watched that ending there, and Marcus Smart in particular, leading towards a Boston victory. I know there was much more involved in that, but that was a tough one.
Yeah, as well. You texted me. You were pretty heated.
Yeah, I was. I was. Yeah, it was that play that really stood out too. I just, Marcus Smart, and to hear it with a damn Bostonian accent, you know, it's Isaiah. You know, that's how they say Isaiah.
Yeah,
but Isaiah. it's Isaiah and Marcus, the MAH instead of the MAR. Marcus Smart, Marcus. And they call Isaiah the little guy. The little guy doing it again. It's like, all right, settle down, Tommy. You don't need
to hear this. Well, if you want to experience the Heat in their own home arena with our own home court bias and everything like that, there's only one way to do it. That's by using SeatGeek, because SeatGeek's the smartest and easiest way to find tickets. There's nothing like being in the arena for the biggest moments of the season, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get that guaranteed seat you want for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. Do you have the SeatGeek app on your phone, David?
Absolutely.
Is it by far the easiest way you've ever found to shop for tickets?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's right there, and I punch it in, look for whatever seats I want or whatever concert or show I want to go to or any, of course, game, and it's super easy to use. And, of course, for our listeners, it's particularly advantageous for them to use the SeatGeek app.
That's right, because they get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. It's really easy to do that. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, Enter the promo code LOHEAT, L-O-H-E-A-T. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek's great. Go to the website, download the app. They grade every seat based on its value. It takes all the work out of it for you. It takes me 5 minutes, if that, to find a seat that I want for right. whatever concert or sporting that I want to go to. It's amazing. Download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code LOHEAT today. All right. Let's move on to our next question. Jeff Nichols, two questions in this mailbag.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. You saved Transmission Tuesday for us.
You really did, Jeff. I mean, look, if you have four quality questions, we will answer them. I mean, we are quality over anything else right here. So is Josh Richardson's struggles due to injury, an inconsistent role, too large of a role, or just who he is? What do you think, Jeff Nichols?
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
to all of them? Okay. All right, yes. Next question. I think
it's funny. And I guess, you know, we've talked about it again, as you pointed out before, when we had Ira Winderman on the show. And we talked about something that you and I have alluded to on a number of occasions, that with Richardson, there always seems to be a confidence factor. And that stems from him missing time with injury. So there's a combination of factors here, unfortunately. The injury takes you out of a rhythm. For a second-year player who needs to feel confident in their shot and their ability to create plays, who does struggle as a ball handler occasionally, you want him to feel as good as possible, and unfortunately just hasn't been allowed to get into a rhythm. So whenever he makes a mistake, he hangs his head, worries about what he's done, and he kind of gets stuck in that moment as opposed to just moving past it. Like, we've heard the cliche before, shooters are going to shoot. You're in a slump. You know, the only way to get out of it is to shoot your way past it. And for a guy like Richardson, who's still, you know, in his second year, despite the fact he spent 4 years in college, he's still a young player. He's still trying to figure himself out. He's still trying to carve out a career for himself. And you know, he's worried that these shots are not going to fall, and he's going to hurt the team. You know, for him, he's always very concerned about making a positive impact and helping the team and the organization. And if he struggles on the floor, then I guess he feels caught up in that particularly negative moment, and it hurts the team.
It doesn't help either that when he was injured, the team went on a 13-0 win streak, you know, a 13-game win streak, with Deion Waiters getting the start and basically lifting this team to new heights and into a playoff race, which was
You think it puts pressure on him?
And now that, yeah, because now that Waiters is out, Richardson is asked to step in, and the team is losing. And so that juxtaposition can't feel good for him. You know, he's like, I leave, Waiters comes in, this team soars into the playoff race, Waiters gets hurt, right. I get the start, and now we might lose so many games that we won't be even in the playoffs. So that can't be good. You know, I with all of that, everything you said, the confidence of his shot just not falling as much, you know, it's the whole "who am I? What's my role on this team? What is the meaning of everything?" type situation. I think there's that. I think he was really bummed when Justice Winslow was out. I think he's really just bummed that Winslow's not on the bench as much. And now Winslow will be for home games, but yeah. I think that hurt. Like, I remember talking with him with Richardson right when the news was announced that Winslow was going to be out for the season when he was going to get shoulder surgery, and he just seemed like bummed, just like depressed. He's like, that's his buddy, you know, that's Rook 1 and Rook 2, and he was just like, this sucks. It's like, my best friend on the team is not going to be with me. So I think that plays a role. It's just like, this whole team is having a good time and having fun, and he just really hasn't been a part of it until right now, and he really hasn't gotten that chance to find that shooter's rhythm, like you mentioned, and to get into it. So it's just I don't know how it's got to be just a mental thing. But we talk about how much Richardson's struggling. I did want to just point out some stats. It's not as bad as it is, right?
Sure.
Last year we had zero expectations. Second round pick, made the roster, big deal. And then he comes out and shoots like Steph Curry for the second half of the year and just blows everybody away. Yeah. And then that was that famed story of, you know, putting up 1,000 shots in a row with Eric Spoelstra late night in the gym when all the lights were off and nobody, you know, whatever. Legend has it is what happened. So that story, they kind of, you know, built the narrative for Richardson's rookie year. This season, expectations were so high. I mean, there's people talking about Richardson being better than Justice Winslow. I mean, there was really lofty expectations for Josh Richardson. And so when you have to meet those expectations, what you do accomplish isn't as looked at the same. He's scoring by the per 36 numbers. He's averaging 11.8 points a game. Last year was 11.1 points a game. That's better.
Right.
So his shooting percentage, his free throw percentage is better. He's averaging more assists. He's averaging as many steals and blocks, so he's as good defensively. He's putting up more three-pointers a game with 5. Last year he put 3.7 up. This is per 36 numbers. Of course, last year he shot 46% from three-point range for the balance of the season. This year just 30%. It's been tough. But overall, he's been good. I mean, his true shooting percentage took a shot. It was at 56.9% last year, 47.3% this year. So about a 10% decrease, in a 10-point decrease in his true shooting percentage. But the other problem is that last year he was getting a lot more assisted shots, and this year he's being asked to shoot off the dribble a little bit more on unassisted shots.
Right.
So I have the numbers here. 46% of his shots were unassisted his rookie year. 35% are unassisted this year. So, or 35% of his makes, not just his shot attempts, his total field goals. So, a lesser percentage of his makes are being assisted. So I don't know if he's just at a two guard now in a situation where he's got to replace Waiters. He's playing on the ball a little bit more. It's a lot of different things. His role has changed from year one to year two, and he's getting used to it. It's the same sort of struggle we saw with Winslow in those first 18 games he played.
Yeah, you can only hope that as the possibility of the playoffs get closer and closer as the last few games start to wind down, that he gets on a hot streak and maybe helps that kind of helps build that confidence and something he can carry over throughout the rest of the regular season and potentially into the playoffs as well. Because I mean, I think that's a clear factor. And maybe you're right. Maybe there is a tie there, having his bud, Justice Winslow out there, and maybe that'll be something that help boost his confidence. So I think that would be
I think a healthy Dragic is going to help a lot too if that ever happens.
Well, I mean, I think it falls on him. We saw Dragic. We've seen him in the past, kind of put on. I saw it in person when I covered their shoot around a few weeks ago. Kind of talking to Richardson, helping guide him and mentor him. But I think that falls on Spoelstra as well. Kind of, what you alluded to earlier, that to say, look, it's not about whether Deion's in the lineup or not. You have to do what you do best and try not to get caught up in any mistakes that you might make. And nobody's perfect. Go out there, play your game to the best of your ability, and just help us win, and that's what counts most. If you miss a shot, big deal. Take another one and make that one, or keep going and doing what you do. If you can't contribute offensively, then, play your heart out defensively. And that's something that we've seen from Roddy Magruder and others, even Winslow himself. So
hopefully
he takes these lessons.
And taking a macro view of this, this is a good learning opportunity, like you're talking about, for Richardson, because as good, as fun as the Heat are going to be, they're not winning the title this year. So it's, getting Richardson these reps now in these last 10 games of the season. If he can get it together, maybe that kind of puts him on the right track again for his third season. So hopefully hopefully he can gain something out of these last few games at the very least. All right, next question. This comes from Taylor Monk. The Raptors have sent the blueprint out to the rest of the league on how to beat the Heat. Drag games into the mud, play tough defense, and have a great isolation score. This team isn't built for that type of game. What do you think?
I mean, those are certainly valid points. I don't know if it's necessarily setting the blueprint, for how to beat this. I think that just, if it's a team that specializes in that sort of thing, then yeah, I guess if they can play that sort of way, then they'll have Miami at a disadvantage. But you look at a team like Cleveland that likes to play at a fast pace, shoot a lot of outside shots, and then roll back on defense. Miami was able to knock them out a couple of times in a row. And I understand that they're struggling defensively overall for the last few months. But, I mean, Miami's able to capitalize when they face a team that plays at a high pace. Look at Houston. I mean, they beat Houston twice. They swept the season series with a team that's clearly perimeter-based and moves at a fast pace. So sure, if there are teams that like to play in a slow, Memphis and the grit and grind, et cetera, or at least what they used to be historically, those kinds of teams might have an advantage. Toronto plays that way now without Kyle Lowry. So, I mean, he'll take a number of the shots that DeRozan was able to connect versus Miami. So I think it is a blueprint of the sorts, but it's also something that if a team is able to do well, look at Orlando. Orlando normally plays at that pace and somehow is able to play at a much faster pace when they go against Miami, and they've been able to beat them for a number of games too. So it's a tough predictor. I'm not sure if it's necessarily an accurate statement to say, look, that's it. This is the only way to defeat them.
If you have a blueprint, that's one thing, but you have to have the builders. You have to have the players. Sure. And
it helps to have DeMar DeRozan out
there. Right. One of the best isolation scores in the NBA. So, is going against a great isolation score. The Heat don't have a great isolation defender, so that makes sense. We saw Rodney Magruder struggle in that game. Rodney Magruder is a really good team defender, and he's a really good one-on-one defender most times. But he's not, against elite guys, it's not going to be every night. We saw him, be a pest on Paul George. But sure. I don't even think Paul George has a reputation for a great offensive scorer. I don't think Paul George isn't a great isolation player to me. He settles for a lot of shots.
He does. He's much more perimeter oriented than he was in the past. And a lot of people have theorized that it might be due to the injury, that whether or not he's still concerned about that. And look, I mean, DeRozan is taller than Magruder. He gets to the line a lot. He's got a great post game. I mean, he has a really nice fadeaway. I mean, all of those weapons are dangerous, and you'd have to put a defender on him that's at least as long, or if not longer. And there's nobody like that in Miami's roster.
Right. Well, there is.
Other than Justice Winslow.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And that's really the value of Justice Winslow. So everybody in the wake of Devin Booker's 70-point night is like, oh my gosh, we should have taken Devin Booker. I'm not saying yes or no to that. I'm just saying Winslow's not a bust. He would have been really useful on this team. What?
Are you saying that, Wes? Are you saying that? Do you think we should have taken Devin Booker?
I think we should have taken Kelly Oubre, but. The other thing is that the Celtics, that's a little inside joke for Heat Check fans that some people will understand. The Celtics don't have a one-on-one player like DeRozan. I'm looking at playoff teams now, right? Let's say the Heat gets to the play. The Wizards don't have an isolation score like that. I mean, John Wall is a terrific one-on-one player, but he's not a guy that's going to turn around, post you up, jab step you to death. He's not. Bradley Beal's not that either. The Hawks don't have that. The Bucks, as good as Giannis has been, they don't have that. Not like DeRozan. Giannis gets a lot of he gets a lot of points like Westbrook does in transition and getting a defensive rebound and taking it down the other way and just kind of being.
Chris Middleton's he's pretty good.
Chris Middleton's pretty good, but I don't think it's to that level DeRozan. And he's more on maybe closer to Bradley Beal on that scale, where I think he's been a lot of catch and shoot this year, but I don't know.
I wrote a piece last season about his turnaround jumper.
Yeah.
And he was actually
he's really good. Yeah, I remember that piece, but has he been that this year since post injury?
I honestly have not seen him. I have not seen him. So I don't know that he's necessarily shooting as many as he was last year.
But I mean, look, the Heat had guys like this last year, Dwayne Wade and Joe Johnson, and that team played too slow. Everybody's like, this team plays too slow. So this team plays too fast. This is the NBA. You're gonna have no team is perfect. You're gonna have weaknesses. Right. Miami's weakness is fortunately one of the rarest assets in the NBA, which is just a dominating one-on-one player. I mean, you look at it, it's DeRozan and LeBron, and that's it, maybe. Kyrie and John Wall, maybe you put in that category, just barely.
KD?
Oh, I'm sorry, in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, yeah.
But you look at a guy like Evan Turner, everybody says he gets overpaid, or why does Rudy Gay keep getting shots? It's they're long guys who can create their own shots and theoretically have all the tools that it takes to be a good isolation scorer. And that's why those guys keep getting work and keep getting paid, is because in theory they should be good isolation players. They can get their own shots. It's such a valuable thing that guys like that continue to get paid. And so the Heat don't really have a guy like that. Even Dion Waiters, when healthy, isn't really like that, because he's not going to back you down necessarily or anything. He's got a little bit of it, but he's not completely that. That's Miami's weakness. If that's my knee's weakness, so be it.
Right. I mean, and I think given a playoff series, that can change. I think you can find multiple schemes so that you can, differ coverages a little bit and make things a little bit more difficult for DeRozan. Play can be a little bit more physical. You don't necessarily get those kind of foul calls. And again, they're going to have to make a transition once Lowry comes back. There's going to be a change there. There's going to be some discomfort for them. And look, I think at this point, what are they, the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference? It doesn't seem likely that Miami will match up with them against them anymore. So it's not something that we have to be worried about, at least in that particular matchup. It's we're looking at Cleveland or Boston as a potential first-round matchup. And if we don't make the playoffs, then who cares?
All right, good. Yeah, I mean, it's not – the Raptors maybe found a way to beat Miami if there's a potential playoff series. but chances are it's not, and it's not really something that other teams are going to repeat. The Cavaliers aren't even going to repeat that because the Cavaliers have their own way of playing. They're not going to be like, well, yeah, what's game plan for the Heat? Yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to be like, well, let's just slow things down. And sorry, you know, you can't shoot those threes. You can Kyrie, forget about those attack dribbles. You know, we're just going to have to slow things down. And that's not how it's going to work. Yeah. They're going to do what they're going to do, and it's going to be up to Miami to match and see if they can possibly stay on the same page. You know?
All right. I think that's all the questions we have then.
All right.
So... thank you for the mailbag questions. Really appreciate it. You can send them to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Or you can send them on Twitter, like Jeff did. He got two questions in by submitting them on Twitter. You can either tweet David or I, or just tweet lockedonheat, @lockedonheat. All right, that's all we got. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show, just like how we laid out, and make sure that you subscribe. So that way you get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
And thanks for our sponsor, SeatGeek, for sponsoring today's episode and Tuesday Transmissions. And thank you, Wes, for having me.